Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and my co-host, Gwyn Scheldamer. Today's programme is another in our four-part series to celebrate Poetry Month. As usual, we're about to visit with a local author, get an introduction to their work, and a glimpse into their lives. We'll ask them what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to read from their work. Today we're very pleased to welcome Coburg poet Richard Green, winner of the 2010 Governor General's Award for Poetry. Richard is a poet, biographer, editor, and university professor. Born in St. John's, he attended Memorial University, and after studying for a PhD at Christ Church, Oxford, he returned to Newfoundland to teach at Memorial. Since 1995, however, he's been a member of the English Department at University of Toronto and is the director of the MA program in creative writing there. Richard is the author of five biographical editorial works and is presently writing a new authorized biography of Graham Greene. But today we want to discuss his poetry with him. Richard has written four books of poetry. Boxing the Compass won the GG for poetry in 2010, and the latest, Dante's House, was published in 2013. You've written two unusually long poems, Richard, as well as many shorter ones that tell stories. Can you tell us about this narrative element in your work?
Oh, yes, of course. My poems tend to be very much nowadays about travel. There's something about a person moving from place to place and the strange things you encounter and the way you're changed by travel. And, of course, for a long time, people have been writing travel poems, travel books, and I feel very much at home with that.
Sometimes you rhyme, and sometimes not. How do you decide on the form your poem will take? And what are your reasons for choosing rhyme, or indeed for not using it?
That's a very tough question, but it's sort of important to me, because you worry about these things, and some people hate rhyme, and some people hate not rhyming. One example of the way I sometimes think about it is the recent long poem Dante's House is written in an Italian verse form called terza rima, which is the form that Dante used long, long ago in the Divine Comedy. The title says Dante's House, but Dante's House is a fake. Dante's house in Florence is not where he lived, not where he was born. It's a place they put up in 1911, guessing he might have lived here or in a place like this, or his family might have lived, you know, around here. And it occurred to me that if I wanted to write about Italy, which I did, I had to accept that there's something about that that's fake. I'm not Italian. I can't speak Italian. I'm fascinated by Italians and love them, but I am not one of them. And not only that, if I try to write in the classic Italian form, that too is a fake. But yet, if you're writing about Italy, Dante's your man. So I go for it. I write that three-line stanza with the funny rhyme scheme, and we're off and running. When I don't rhyme, it's because I think the subject is not suited to that heightened music, that if you have a sad subject or something you want to be especially cautious about, you don't want the chimes going off all over the place, though often enough rhymes occur in the middle of lines, internal mm-hmm. rhymes and such. So really I'm kind of a jingle man in the end. I should be working for Don Draper.
I don't think anyone could describe your rhyme as jingles. It's really very sophisticated, and it must be a challenge to carry it through such a long poem.
Oh, well, thank you. Oh, yeah.
Dante's House.
It was. It took a year, and I could be held up for almost a week on a couple of lines. Because the verse form requires three rhymes, it was difficult. And you also have to keep saying something. The thought has to be going forward. You can't reach for words that are completely out of the normal just to make a rhyme, because the reader will notice. And also, you want it all to be one thing. You don't want the rhyme to be just banging on separately from what you're saying. So one of the things you do, you don't punctuate sometimes at the end of a line, and you let the sense run through the rhyme into the next line. And then the rhyme gets quietly absorbed into the sound of what you're saying, so that there's a music and it's part of what you're saying, as opposed to a rhyme that you suddenly collide into at the end of a line and then have a period after it or a full stop or something. So there's a lot of things like that, but it is hard, though it's also an imaginative discipline, because you just sit down, you think about this thing, and you think about different ways of saying it, and then you discover something you didn't expect to say that's actually better. and that happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating world, rhyme. But sometimes I've written free verse poems, too.
Yes.
So that's a different skill. Yeah.
Well, how about reading us something?
As a great interviewer, you've caught me off guard by kindly suggesting before the show that I should read a poem that I've not read in, 20 years. In fact, I probably haven't looked at it in 15. So here we go. This is a poem, when was it written? Sometime in the 80s, and it's about Newfoundland. It's called Allegiance. Politics is a bubbling at the source, a sound where there are ears to hear it. Inland, a river gives birth to oceans soon enough, and the solitary places echo with true conversations. My new world has begun in emptiness, in the dereliction of old lives, the silent houses and the fallen shacks of a dispersed people. Their voices linger in the long grass, cry out from island to island, mutter endlessly over barrens. Most just when most alone, and most intimate from afar. We learn compassion in raw wind and in places of stone, for the dead are no one's people except that they are heard and chosen. We give them our world to inhabit, and they become our justice, in each moment demanding return and restitution for their bones. Revolution begins only in dust, in those untended graves and their rain-washed wooden markers. It is in the course of things that I should go to them, visit their weathered hillsides, give over to them voice for voice my world for another to be born, and always it must begin with them, where the politics of stony places, considered passion of the wilderness.
Thank you. How about another?
Well, why don't I try a ferocious poem called Corrections, which, to be honest, it's set at Warkworth Prison. Corrections. My friend works medium security and says of his mad charges, you can't be angry, they're sick, shouldn't be here. To the near sane, he doles punishments when fuck you, screw, is prelude to a shank, some soup spoon snatched and ground against the whetstone of the bars, a razor blade bound into a pencil's eraser tip, or merely the handle of a toothbrush made murder one sharp. And stranger things. Back in stir after his biopsy, a man threatened to force a pen through the incision and crush his liver unless given Tylenol 3. He settled for extra strength and the promise of a doctor. I was just joking, he added meekly, knowing threats of self-harm bring sanctions, too, days apart in an observation cell, diaper-clad and deprived of anything imagination could turn into a noose. Others would cut themselves or even rip open the skin and muscle with their hands. One inmate slashed deeper than his scrotum, poured blood and half his entrails on the floor. Luckless, he missed the artery and lived. Some lifers, almost done, can no longer mount the stairs to the range, or have left their wits at the scene, time's muddled fugitives, who could not pick themselves from a lineup. Beyond correction, a man with one leg weighs 500 pounds and may no longer lift himself. Torpid, he pisses and shits among the blankets, cannot wash or move, cuffed to a history of offenses, manslaughter released, and then child rape. His heart and kidneys wind down. My friend, tall as a linebacker, joins a staggering scrimmage of guards and paramedics as they hoist the stretcher down stairwells and across a lighted courtyard to the gate where an ambulance waits to parole him.
Thank you. That was wonderful. We'll take a break now.